listening to the best tea in the city on Kaya 959.
If I look comfortable.
All right.
She's here.
Running. What happened?
I was in the studio until 5, and then I woke up this morning at 7 to, like, journal. And I don't know what happened between then and coming here.
What do you mean journal?
I journal in the morning, and then...
As in write your thoughts and things like that?
Yeah, just process, you know, stuff. And but then I fell asleep.
I never understood. You need to teach me. You need to teach me that. Look, at before...
But luckily, I'm 10 minutes away, so...
Oh, is, okay,
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, not far, yeah.
10 minutes, okay, it's fine. Journaling.
Man, it's a lifesaver for me, but I don't know how I would be able to understand what it is that I'm thinking sometimes, you know, because sometimes things are layered, you know, and also words are limited, so it takes me sometimes to understand what it is that I'm feeling and how I want to, even just hearing your own, like, words out loud helps. So for me, the paper does the same thing, externalizing my thoughts.
So you write it down?
I write it down.
You don't dictate it?
No, so I do this thing called Artist Pages.
Okay.
I ran into this book called The Artist's Way, and it just recommends sort of just doing a stream of consciousness writing, and you don't really edit it too much, you don't think too much about what... And it's also a way to sort of offload any worries subconsciously, anything that you might not understand that you're processing, because you're not thinking when you do stream of conscious writing.
Who reads this?
Nobody. No one reads it.
So it's just it's you and your diary, basically.
It is kind of like a diary, but I find that by the time I get to the second or third page, some kind of creativity has taken over. Even if I'm telling, you know, a mundane sort of story, it depends what's going on, you know. But there's always space.
And you're writing in first voice.
Different things. There's no real formula.
How did it start?
Well, for some reason, words have always been my friend. So even before the music,
yeah.
I remember in grade 4, we were asked to write a poem on a color. And I wrote a poem on the color black. And I remember feeling quite a connection to words. And it was like, you know, I don't know how old you are when you're in grade 4, standard 2. Yeah, I was in standard 2.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I remember writing, like, black is this, black is that, black is so dark that you cannot see, black is a cocoon, warm and something, black is the place for me, something like that, but it rhymed and it had this...
Chances are you were, like, 10.
Yeah, I distinctly remember that moment, like, okay, this way of processing makes sense for me.
Oh, my word. Yeah. So it was not like, hey, Msaki, nansi therapy ntombazane, start journaling.
No, but obviously it's been recommended in spaces like that where you're sort of searching for healing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it banana in a low concept in different ways.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, take me now to... Here you are, Msaki at 12, because I think there's something about the age 12 where you are now aware of who you are in this world, or at least that you are alive. You know, you are walking the streets of East London. What are you hearing? What's really making you turn and say, my soul is moving towards this direction?
Wow, when you're 12, I do remember being really interested in being outdoors. My dad used to make us go-karts, so I'd ride down the hill with some friends. As a crate, as you know.
Yes, and
you have to use it as a steering wheel. So I remember loving being outside. I used to BMX with the friends. And also, I grew up in Malinda. Malinda is the first suburb when you're coming from Mdantsane.
Yes.
So there was a lot of, you know, community, because it still had the feel of a township.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's at the fringe of East London.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When you're coming in from King Williamstown side.
Sure, sure.
So there was a bit of a hybrid way of living. You know, I could visit my friends. My parents didn't stress too much if we were out in the afternoon. You know, we'd go down and play at the crab stream and go hunting crabs and make sticks.
Yes,
and
yes.
There'd always be a war with the kids.
That was my childhood too. Yeah,
from the other neighborhood when they came to ride their BMXs here. It's like, who told you to come here? So I just remember my childhood being full of adventure, and 12 years old, always had a tennis ball in my pocket, ready to play, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was a bit of a shock because I went to high school quite young. Oh. And it was when I was 12, it was my first year.
I mean, if you could write a poem like that at 10, come on.
I went to a girls' school that was not so progressive. It was, you know, it's a good prestigious girls' school, but when I was 12, I really struggled with fitting in high school. If I'm still wanting to play, I come from a very, like, you know, playful, I'm still climbing trees. I think I'm a late bloomer.
Yeah.
I felt that other kids were really advanced for me. I couldn't fit into the conversations. They were really talking about boys. The only thing I was thinking about boys was, like, smack him with a tennis ball.
Yes.
You know, like...
I was just
so late. And so for me, there was just a lot of, like, displacement when I got to high school.
Yeah.
I remember a lot of searching, you know. And first, and also my identity, I had to start figuring out who I was quite quickly because I had an older sister who was an extremely excellent scholar who was like number one in the country for squash, like really doing well in matric, and I'd just gotten there.
Yeah.
And I wasn't even called by my name, I was being called Sioli's little sister.
I remember having to
ask myself constantly, like, oh, but I'm doing Asanda, what makes me different?
Yeah.
You know, oh, I like this, I don't like that. I play tennis, she plays squash. So I found myself having to answer about myself quite a lot in that environment, because you'll find that those prestigious girls' schools do that to sisters. They compare them so heavily.
Yeah.
You know, it seems to be a tradition, you know, like you're just meant to follow in your sister's footsteps. They're looking for a 2.0.
Yes.
And
yes,
I was just in the clouds, an artist, didn't even know it yet.
And that can be daunting for a girl,
for
a child even.
Comparison, I guess, is always daunting.
Do you find that, and I'm going to put it as bluntly like I said earlier on the show, did you find that that could be the reason why you love applause?
Do I? It does something for me. You know, this thing of journaling, there was a time, about 2-3 weeks ago, I wrote an email to myself, and I was like, I mean, if I had a blog, I would have shared this.
Yeah.
But I got scared and I kept it. I wrote about my mother's wisdom. When she laminated a couple of certificates that I had hidden in my backpack.
Okay.
Because you know, it was around this time, and I was used to, you know, lots of trophies in the house. I also have a younger brother who's a sportsman.
Yeah.
He ended up playing like rugby for Lions and Sharks and stuff. We had a very like interesting family, but there was always achievements in the house. There was trophies, and I was already starting to feel,
and you're the middle
being
child,
in the shadow of my sister.
Yeah.
And this one time, I came home from prize giving in my own right, doing quite well. I think I got like, you know, academic stuff for writing in English. Yeah. I did well, and I was playing provincial sport in like 4 codes. I played hockey, tennis. I was running for my province. But because, you know, there's this other being that they sort of compare me to. No, I was really at school. It wasn't such a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, she's an SA champ. You broke a record in provincial, whatever. Who cares? You know. But at home, my parents were always encouraging, quietly, not over the top. You know, just always they see you, but they're working hard. They don't have time to come to all the games.
Yes,
they don't verbally congratulate. It's not in the culture.
Yeah.
But you can see they're proud. And I remember this one time coming back from this prize giving, and I'd hidden these certificates because I was like, who's gonna?
Yes.
And my mom quietly took them and she laminated every single one of them whilst calling my passage. And she said nothing to me. She just sort of gave me a smile. And I will never forget that moment. It was like a mother's wisdom.
Yes.
I never thought that 2 sheets of plastic could be so important.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Yeah. So that's the applause that I didn't know I needed, and I got it from home first.
You were journaling, and then you fell asleep.
And then I woke up and I was here. Like, is this still part of my dream?
You're dreaming, girl. You're dreaming. If you just tuned in, I'm hanging out with Msaki. Like I said, I mean, every time you come to Kaya, you're here to perform and hardly ever sit down and have a chat. And I think you even brought your guitar.
This is my home.
Yeah.
This is my home. I'm always ready to go.
Okay, now we have to then say, bring out the guitar, but we'll do that later. Because really, honestly, we wanted to just celebrate you, talk to you, get to know who Msaki is. Or Asanda at home. So, like, who is this girl? Everybody is lining up to work with you and so on. Yet, eccentric, yet not so the average singer, you know, but everybody's like, no, Msaki is. And now, hence the background of who and what Msaki is driven by. Playing with crabs, playing with tennis, and all of these things, and the love for the applause. What made you then say, music?
I wish I had one of those, like, I knew when I was eight, singing in church.
That
I had no clue. Like, I think the artistry, you know, was always there.
Yeah.
And like I said, I think I probably saw it first with the writing. I was also I love drawing.
Yeah.
But at some point, you know, it started being processed as having too much time on your hands when you were being creative.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
I have a very, like, my dad is an attorney, and he used to be up at 3 a.m. reading. If I woke up, I'd always see his light on, you know.
Sure.
And so, like, part of me just wanted to be a serious and, you know, proper member of society. Not a nuisance, dependent artist. I had no like, real role models around me that showed me a viable way of being an artist.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the artists I knew were burdens. All the artists we knew were confused about their lives. I was like, why would I choose that as a career path when, you know, I have this access and the parents are like, you know, education is important.
Yeah.
So I was a late bloomer. I went and I did other things first. I did a short stint trying to study law, and nobody forced me at home. Nobody said, you must do this.
Yeah.
But I thought, like, this is what proper adults do when they, you know.
But study serious things.
Yeah, study serious things. And I was a very serious child. But,
and what happened?
No, it's strange. You know, I think it's also the space, being away from home. Because when I was at school at home, I was in boarding school, but sometimes I'd be at home.
Yeah.
And I had this book that had sketches of, you know, I just sketched all my friends from grade 10. I was sketching all the matric dance balls for the seniors, designing their dresses. I was always, like, drawing cartoons. I was always drawing horses and birds. I was really into sketching.
Yes.
And I wrote poems in that book too, and I wrote little songs, and it was already some sort of creative outlet. But I would hide it, because if my dad saw that book, he'd be like, oh, study guide, okay. And then I'd see, like, a maths and science study guide the next day on my desk, because it's being processed of, you know, as being a little bit bored and having too much time on your hands. So I started, you know, hiding this thing. And I think, you know, people don't do this intentionally. And I've processed some of this with my parents in retrospect. And for them, it's like, they didn't know. They didn't know that this was important to me. And I didn't know.
Neither one of them had the visual arts thing in them?
It's still a mystery where that comes from. I think from my mom's side of the family, there could be, you know, there's some visual art talent. There's an architect. There's a painter.
Ah.
Yeah, but in my dad's side of the family, it's all composers.
Yeah.
Choir masters, musicians. It's a mess. A guitarist. My dad's brother is an excellent guitarist. My dad wrote his dimidi for choir. Wherever he was chronically starting choirs. If he was a high school teacher, there would be a choir. If he was in the served in the Liga A board, he started a choir.
Even.
Yeah, there was always choirs around that man, because my grandfather was a composer. You know, and I'm like, why are you surprised?
From
why are you surprised that I'm like this? You know,
why are they surprised?
And it's just a different way of being. I mean, my dad went and became a clerk at 17, and then took himself to varsity. And you know, he's an amazing man, and so is my mom. They taught at a school called Makgeledwana High School in Pedi.
Yeah.
They're celebrities. I can't walk with them in the Eastern Cape. People are like, Principal, yo! Because they were so kind to their community.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and so for me, it's not that they didn't see it, but they just had a different way of life. They had different choices to make. Yeah. And it made it possible for me to deviate now. And now I'm not going to question my kids if they want to be artists, but there was a little bit of a fight, you know, to try and reclaim the gift.
Of course, Seba Kapstad?
Seba Kapstad, yeah. Those are so Undumiso Manana and Zoe Mutiha, I find, are firstly two of the strongest writers I've come across in this country. You know, their voices are instruments, and they also have this, like, really humble, laid back nature. Their gift hasn't overwhelmed them, and they're incredible. I love them so much.
Yeah.
And I thought, I like them both, you know, separately. I like both their projects separately, but this one is where you find them together, and there's magic there as well.
Yeah. Let's play a Seba Kapstad. And Tato, she needs her coffee.
Do I look tired?
Here's my top 10. We're hanging out with Msaki. It is Kaya 959 on the street, on the air. Msaki is my guest as we're talking about her life in music. And we'll be continuing some more with some of the songs that we know her to have recorded and is part of her stable. We'll also talk about her upcoming show this very weekend, which you don't want to miss. Hashtag... addicted to getting applause. Does that equate to loving attention?
That's so strange, because I don't identify with that. But I, you know, it's the concept of applause, you know, is something I also thought about when I was quite young, I did say. But I went to this incredible place in North Carolina when I decided to start my journey as a musician. It wasn't a long time, but it changed my life. It was like, you know, a couple months, but there was this place run by a group of artists, a community of artists, musicians, printmakers, photographers, and they would take in young artists from all around the world. There was like thousands of applicants and they took 30 of us. And I was there, you know, with people from everywhere, all like just curious, but also trying to understand art and spirituality and where they meet. You know, this family, Jonathan and Melissa Hulser, those are the two sort of leaders of the school, and they had a, their parents also helped out, and then their community of friends would do workshops with us, but we spent a month doing nothing, where they just said, you kind of need to understand, like, the, you know, the applause of the universe, the applause of heaven, you know, as a creator, because you're co-collaborating, you know, and if you aren't connected to that internal well, or that internal lake, if you don't feed it, if you don't watch what you behold, how will you determine your output? Where are you creating from? You know, are you going to be creating for the applause of men, or are you going to be creating for the applause of walking your purpose as a person who's co-creating with the universe? So it was my foundation about, like, where does your applause come from? And so for me, it's an extra thing that people appreciate it. I do it because it's an outpouring of who I am. It's a byproduct of understanding my place here. It's the most natural way that I can share love as a human being, being an artist, being a musician, making community, learning through that, making mistakes, knowing how to say sorry to my band when I'm wrong. Those are the things, you know, the interpersonal. And it's humbling because you mess up. And you have to go back to community. And that's the important applause, I think. I need to understand how to hold the applause of my peers. And the creator.
You're on socials. And I'm glad you did that, because I think those who don't understand it, they may think you maybe are seeking attention, but I understood where it came from. Prince KB won an award with your song.
Okay.
No recognition given.
It's...
But you see what I'm saying?
It's not my song.
No, but it's both of you. Both of you worked on it, collaborated, but why not share? And when you said...
Yeah, man, you went to the things. I'm not a person who speaks, like, it's probably the first and last time that I've ever addressed something like that. And, you know, there was, like, immediately I was like, ah. And part of it was because our communication personally had broken down. I was trying to reach out to him, being like, dude. And then the first address or apology was on his face. So I think my reaction was more emotional, like, yo, man, you could have apologized to me. You got my number. We're trying to reach you to clear this thing. And now I'm like, you know, my options are limited, and now our communication is here. So I regret that part of it. But I also know that I'm very aware of the space that I'm in. As a female, you know, writer and producer. I was in a session last night where people didn't understand that I had production ideas. We're always fighting for that seat. And I'm saying, look, I understand what moves my voice. If I can put you halfway, let me help you lay that bed for me, because I know my voice, I know my limitations. So if you're not going to see me as a producer, you're not seeing me in my full life as a collaborator. And so when I, you know, part of it was also addressing the fact that we're not just your decorations on top of your songs, you know, and we're good. We worked through it. But it was like a pivotal moment for me, because I had to, you know, I made an emotional decision. I slightly regret it, because I'm not a person who addresses things in public. But all the other avenues were closed. And, the other thing that was happening was that, like, I felt like it could have been better handled, you know. And I know, you know, Prince was on his own journey about how to communicate and how to be better. But at that time, I was like, man, you really could at least acknowledge that I played a part in this. It was my first award for an electronic song. I was excited, but like, can't celebrate if you're not being acknowledged. You can't rejoice in the moment as a co-achiever. And so for me, it's like, what do you think my contribution was here then, you know?
Another 2.0.
it's always going to come back to that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. That's why we always have to be aware of our filters. I'm always going to process middle child issues.
Yes.
I have to do it in my relationship. I have to do it at home. I have to do it with my kids. I'm like, hey, is this a genuine uprising of an emotional conflict? Are you going against something because it's unjust? Or is it your own scar that hasn't healed? So
yes,
we have to keep doing that dance.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's your stuff.
Yeah.
And you're projecting. And sometimes you have the right to be upset.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but with Prince, we're cool. It's just that time, it was just important for me to say, DJs, producers, yo, we're just not your decorations, guys. Like, that was my story. Those are my words. That's my intention. That's trying to share hope with the world, you know?
Did that then, what's the word I'm looking for? Put a filter in who and how you choose who to work with?
I would say that it could have made me a little bit more assertive.
Chris?
And I think what it also does is just help you communicate upfront that
yes,
this is what I expect.
Yeah.
And also because I'm a person who's atmospheric, I do the vibe thing. Those things are always communicated in retrospect. But you learn, you know, just to if you care about the relationship, you make it very clear upfront to protect the relationship.
Yes.
But do we agree that this is how we're going to work? It's not fun, you know. I asked my team to take care of it, but at least the conversation must be had.
Let me tell you, I've never been so excited to watch Tiny Desk. Tiny Desk is one of my... Listen, if there's anything that lockdown gave me, was Tiny Desk. I binged on that thing. So you can imagine, I'm always looking out for Tiny Desk, refreshing, concepts and stuff that come out of it, because I think it's groundbreaking. And then I see you, the Duzo Makatini, Black Coffee, and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
That must have been, because that is to the world. Like, I'm sure your North Carolina family is like, what? We know her.
No, that was great. It was amazing. And it was a first, you know, to be part of a South African that had their own whole Tiny Desk show. And I think for me, that whole setup represents a collapsing of genres and sounds. You know, Nduduzo,
yes,
Emma's open Nduduzo, he represents something.
Yes.
And I think, you know, Black Coffee's openness to those worlds makes it an interesting space.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It does. Now, which then brings up the next thing, because Msaki's music is not your normal run-of-the-mill, middle-of-the-ground, because the minute you are a female vocal singing in your vernac, you get into this box called Afropop, Afrofusion, Afrojazz. But Msaki's like, no, it's layered. How do you then push the envelope forward? Because I feel like you're always pushing that envelope. Guys, there's more to us than just labels. What's next? What is, if you, right now you're in the studio, you're working. What is that? What is that even going to sound like? Do you even know? Do you wake up saying, this is the sound now for the future? Because I think artists like you are our fortune tellers, so to speak, on, guys, here's the future.
Yeah, it's such an adventure. You know, I'm so lucky to just be able to follow an idea and to keep going with it. I do a lot of, you know, I do a lot where I go and I serve other people's sounds and I bring myself to it, which has also grown me. Like, my love for electronic music has grown because of my collaborations.
Yeah. I mean,
and it has
Black Motion, your collaboration there, and there are other collaborations as well, yeah.
There's quite a few, and I've just embraced that like, that's a world that I, you know, I do belong there, and I also have taken some of the influences into my supposedly acoustic singer-songwriter. All of those things are getting blurred by the day, you know.
Yeah.
There's so much happening where those worlds coexist and then they go apart. You know, I'm still a person who can sing a song and play guitar, and I'm fine with that offering.
Yeah.
You know, but it's interesting, even now I was thinking about my sets at the bass line, and I have a song where it's just me and two violins. There's a song where we're doing our own arrangement of Fetch Your Life with, like, you know, Kali Ngoveni, who plays with Solila Solota, playing bass,
yes,
giving it a vibe. There's so much going on, and for me, music is that transportable thing. It can live in so many of these spaces.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what it's teaching me, that I can play in different guises, and I can serve the space that I want to be in at that time. I'll choose the ensemble and create it for that time. If I wanna, and limitations are also interesting. Sometimes I you know, I'll limit myself to a double bass and the percussionist and myself on keyboard on guitar, and use that as a way to structure the sound. So I can't really tell you in terms of genres, but. I will be releasing 2 projects this year.
2?
Yeah. And so I'm looking forward to just starting the sharing process. I think it's a big year for sharing. It's a big year of letting go.
Yeah.
And because, you know, somewhere in my head, I'm like on my 4th album. I'm 4 years away from where I am right now.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So I think it's time to just catch up with myself. I'm looking forward to,
what,
to feeling a bit empty at some
point.
You know,
with your relationships in the electronic space, I mean, Black Motion released a almost 50-track album. Boom. Sunil Musician, the same thing, 40 tracks, boom. So when you say you've got 2 albums dropping, how many songs are we talking here per album?
Well, I guess I might as well tell you guys. I made 2 albums by mistake. And then it's been the process of like,
we're not complaining.
Is it, you know, one is just really carrying on with my own sound, you know, with lots of instruments, with the band, all the things that I hear, strings as an emotional part of it, you know, as an answer back to me as a vocalist, and then because I had so many of these collaborations, they, you know, some of them knew that I was working on an album, and they were like, can we be involved? And they started sending me stuff, and then I had like this crazy thing that I don't know what I was like, what is this becoming? You
yes,
know?
Yes.
And my co-producer for this whole project is Naomi Yanga, who's the most open.
Wow, from Black
creative.
Sunshine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Born in a Taxi.
That's my guy. So we've been like looking at what's going on, and my collaborators send me stuff, and I've been working with and you know, some guys in the US as well. But mostly everyone that I worked with sent me stuff, and I basically have an electronic album. I have an acoustic album. We've been deciding like how am I going to present it. So I'm looking forward.
We don't care. Just bring it.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting second half of the year. So
I think, Chris, let's go there.
Secrets. Oh, I'm telling all my secrets.
Yes, yeah. Yes. You're home. That's why.
Exactly.
We'll go for a break and then we'll come back with the Black Sunshine. Yeah, we have to.
Wow.
It is Kaya 959. I know we need to give you some money, but we'll double it in the next hour. Why not? You can hold it. Isn't that a beautiful?
It's so thing? Pretty. Yeah.
It is so you.
I like it so much. Yeah. Sebong.
Now, Naomi Yanga. Because we thought we lost him somehow. He's behind the scenes?
No, he's just navigating this artistry thing differently. I sometimes wonder about, you know, if I'm not going to disappear on you guys for a couple of years and just keep working. His work lives everywhere, you know? He's constantly working with, like, a protest troupe in Brazil. He works with collaborators, incredible musicians in Egypt.
Yeah,
he's just about to debut an opera in Berlin.
He opera just, in Berlin?
He wrote a whole opera during lockdown, an entire opera. So, you know, he's busy, but it's not like, it's how we've been taught to consume art and artistry,
yes.
And especially music. He's never left. He's been working in theater, writing like original music. We've been touring with Madala, you know, we've been doing projects together. But it's just like the work speaks.
Now, tell me about this thing in Cape Town. Beethoven?
Yeah, so he just, I think last Friday, he was commissioned to do a composition. Some kind of, you know, I think there was some sort of Beethoven festival, I'm not exactly sure, but he was asked to make a piece, and he put Beethoven in conversation with Joseph Shabalala. And it was sung by Lungisa Blaikies, you know, a few string musicians, the pianist. So, that was...
Wow.
And they got their treat to get that...
Nikki B, you have something there. Bring Naomi Yanga to come and explain this Beethoven versus or in conversation with Joseph Shabalala. That would be Eshe of note.
Yeah, I don't know anyone else who can make those, you know, who can put those two languages together. So I feel like I'm lucky. I've got mentors and I've got people around me that just give me so much space to be as layered as I want to be and as I need to be.
Who do you listen to that will be shocked Guti, this is one of their favorite songs or favorite artists.
Cubs are the smalls. No, I'm joking. I listen to Cubs.
Why?
I love Cubs. Yo, I love Cubs.
Yeah.
No, who do I listen to that will be a shock? I don't think anybody shocks anyone at this point about me.
You'll be surprised.
What could shock you guys about me? It's quite... I don't know.
But that's what we do, right? We box. Like, I wanna... Hey.
Let me think.
Msaki Pela. Hey, Msaki's there. It's up there. How? Cubs are the small. Scorpion Kings. Really? Hey. Can she wash with this?
I'm actually really interested in piano production. I wanted to understand. You know, yesterday I got like a master class in lock drum theory, essentially.
Yes.
I wanted to understand, like, how does it change key? Oh, in Zaganjan, okay, what makes piano? Why is this beat like this? I was like, yeah. Oh, if I introduce these chords, are you going to feel like it's losing something? I'm not interested in genres. That's the other thing. I'm, like, interested in the collaboration.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're willing to meet me halfway and make something new, then let's see. But I'm not interested in trends. You know, I wasn't going to... Yeah. I let the gom wave pass me. I was literally going to let the piano wave pass me too.
Yeah.
But there was just like a consistent request to do something. Yeah. And then I found that, oh, there's a bit of an openness here for the genre to evolve, which is what I like about South Africa and the creativity, is that if a genre stays around long enough, imagine a piano album from Duduzo Makatimi. I'm just saying, then the sub-genres become interesting.
Yes.
And
yes.
Because I'm a student of creativity, I'm here for it. I'm not close to anything.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to jump on because it's a, you know, there's a code and there's a wave. Mm. I will collaborate if there's something to say with another artist. So I'm open. We'll see.
Baseline. What's happening?
Lord Pori. So I'm going to be playing with the most amazing band. I play with Galingoveni on bass, Tsepo Tsotetsi on keys. He also plays saxophone and he's an incredible... he does orchestrations as well for orchestra. Mm-hmm. I did something with him with the Berlin Youth Orchestra that he had orchestrated and created from scratch. I've got a great band, Khonsa Makhene, you know?
Mm.
Khonsa Makhene started... what's this band? With Bafana on keys. How do I forget? My brain is twerking right now.
That's why. Yeah.
Do you not remember this incredible band? It will come back to Gwani Experience.
Gwani Experience.
He's one of the founding members of Gwani Experience. He plays with Madala. He's got his own like projects as well. He plays with Nduduzo. He's just a talented and beautiful soul. I love playing with him. We had a rehearsal a couple of days ago and I was just so happy to see them all. And then who else do I play with? Lungile Kunene on drums.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got the two string players that will join us.
Yeah.
Lebogang Ledwaba, an excellent virtuoso. You know, she's a sought after violinist in orchestras and in ensembles. So I'm lucky I get to play with good people. And we're just going to, you know, present a really beautiful set. So I've thought about the visuals. I'll have some of my weird videos on there. And I hope to, you know, create an experience and just a portal of escape, even if it's for an hour.
And
just the privilege of live music. It's been a while for me to play to an audience like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I come back to the stage with much trepidation and respect.
Yeah.
It's a sacred space for me. And so we look forward to sharing. And
this is when? Time.
This is on Saturday. At the Lyric Theatre.
Yeah.
I'm also playing with an incredible musician called Munga K.
Yeah.
And he will be playing the first set with his band. Mm. And then we get to share something after that. So
tickets still available?
Tickets available. Apparently, it's close to being sold out because they have to limit the capacity of the venue.
Yeah.
But CompuTicket, if you just type Baseline Live, you'll see the options. Mm. This is happening... I'm trying to think if Zoe and Uzu also have a show. I think I don't know if it's happened or if it's happening, but there's a whole. I'm not the only one playing. There's also incredible shows to check out.
But the main important thing is that yours is this Saturday.
Yeah, mine is this Saturday.
Yours is this.
I'm just like lost track of time.
As in day after tomorrow.
The day after tomorrow.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah.
What do you mean crazy? Do you even know what you're wearing?
Luckily for me, the Philippe Mazwuga comes to my room. She's like, girl, you don't have to think about these things. You know, she's like, I can see you just have so much on your mind.
Please,
Philippe, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
So I told them like the set list and I told them what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling. We discussed the lights, you know, with with the team, with my team, Jess from a Kum agency, and he just took it all, and he's created an incredible experience for us.
You said two albums coming up, so when?
Hey,
Tim! Siyatheta ab.
Actually, but let me tell you something. The first song I wrote on this album is a protest. It's essentially a protest album. That I started working with Abud Naomi Young.
Mm.
It's an album of protest and love songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And I've trialed these compositions in front of people. They've actually informed how I've decided to go about them and record and complete them. We had done half the album and then lockdown hit because we were going to go for another session.
Mm.
But what happened is that it sort of deconstructed my process, and I started having to do songs, you know, one thing at a time. I had to start programming some things. I had to send something. Bukani can't forget the keys up, or because that's the nature of lockdown. It did that sort of process. It was interesting for me. So I completed the album like that. But what it meant is that I also started making other electronic stuff, and then I was starting to get things from these producers. Mm. And so I'll release the first part of this album on Marikana Day.
Oh, wow.
Because the first song that I wrote for this album was Blood, Guns and Revolutions.
Wow.
And that was the day that my heart broke. Because it's almost like the rose-tinted glasses shattered.
Yes.
And a part of that, like, accepted Rainbow Nation dream that I had been given when I went to those schools that compared me to my sister.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, no. This is not the South Africa that I signed up for. And it was a rude awakening for me, and it woke up a protest song in me. And then there was violence against women, and then there was another way to have to deal with these layers, because I'm like, you know, if I have hope as a song, how do I keep it genuinely in the midst of so much pain, you know? And so the album has been a constant lament, and I love the fact that I've been able to perform it, because those songs needed to be sung in space and time, you know, as little musical monuments to say, I'm sore about this right now. I'm disappointed in this right now.
So you're coming back, right?
I'll be here. I think it's August 16 or August 15, I'm not sure. Yeah. I'll make sure that I come and talk to you guys about it here first.
No, it's not it's an instruction.
Yeah, I'll be here.
Yeah. I'm young, I know Kiwang.
It's okay.
Msaki, keep shining, sis.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
The best tea in the city. Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to midday on Kaya 959.
On the street, on the air.